You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
I received a piece of work from the desk of John Bickard, Portfolio Manager, 91 Value Fund. Value investors, it goes on to say, see the future for what it is, uncertain. We buy when there are low expectations, often no expectations, and let the dice fall where they may. A bad outcome results in further poor, although not disastrous, returns. An unexpectedly good outcome results in a bonanza. If it sounds easy, it isn't. It requires a steely resolve and a thick skin to buy when the news is just plain bad and everyone else is heading for the exits. With me now is a person with a steely resolve and a very thick skin indeed. And that is, of course, the author, John Bickard. What prompted this? Because actually what I didn't say at the beginning, John, is the headline was May the 29th, a value investor's dream. Remind us what May the 29th significance is.
So May 29 will be the general election in South Africa, which has been worrying investors in the South African market for the last few months and probably for the last year. And it will probably be a catalyst for a move upwards or downwards in the South African market based on the outcome of the election. And, you know, when we look at the valuation of South African shares, which we've been now drumming this, going on about this for the last 12 months.
Yes.
The valuations suggest that the market is very worried or pretty worried about the outcome of the election on May 29. So it really fits into our, you know, the way we see things, because the valuation of South African stocks suggests there is a very high probability of a bad outcome in the election. And we certainly are not people who predict the future, but really the way we invest is to look and say, what do the valuations suggest? And, you know, in this case, we would say 70-80% probability of a bad outcome in the election. And then we look at the probabilities and say, are the probabilities better than that? And that is actually, if the probabilities are better than that, that is enough for us to decide to buy. I mean, it's not a case that it has to be a good outcome, because, you know, the probability is in our favor. So basically we see the election as a catalyst to unlock some of the deep value that is in the South African market.
So you think that all the bad news is completely discounted by the bears, by the market, and any piece, any glint of hope is going to propel the market higher, not propel it higher, but stabilize it and maybe go higher in the medium and long term.
Yes. So I would say in the case of mid-cap South African shares, I would say propel higher, because these shares have been absolutely murdered for a number of years. So we've had just consistent bad news since Ramaphoria. Ramaphoria was the first quarter of 2018 when in the value fund we had nothing really in South Africa Inc. because a really good outcome was discounted. And you can remember back to 2018, there was widespread, you know, after President Ramaphosa came in, there was a lot of optimism about reforms, and South African shares went to multi-year highs and actually went to quite, by South African standards, quite demanding valuations. So, for instance, the banks traded on as much as 12 or 13 times earnings, which is quite high by South African standards. And then, you know, that's the other side of when you buy good expectations, then obviously, as we all know, the next 6 years was a big disappointment. First, there were no reforms. Secondly, there was unprecedented load shedding. And in the last 6 months, there's a lot of worry about the election, and there's a lot of worry about the ANC falling to a low level of support and having to form an alliance. And obviously, the market is really concerned that the alliance will be with the left, with a combination of the EFF and MK. And all those things have resulted basically in South African shares in dollar terms. And here I like to look at something like Absa, which is really a very SA focused share.
Yes.
In the first quarter of 2018, Absa traded at 200 rand a share, and the rand dollar was, if you can believe it, it was 12 to the dollar then. And so if you look at that, it was trading at about $17. And now, 6 years later, Absa is exactly halved in dollars. The share's 145 rand. The rand dollar's 1850. it's trading at less than $8. So the share has actually halved in dollar terms in the last 6 years. And in the process, the valuation, it was trading on a 12 PE then and 1.6 times book. And now it's trading at a 6 PE and 0.8 times book. So the valuation's halved and the share's halved because the last 6 years have been so disappointing. So they're opposite mirror images of each other.
Okay, but there's a reason that it's gone from $17 to $8 per share for the giant bank, yes. ABSA. You talk about all the bad news here. You lay it out very squarely. You talk about state capture. Okay, that has not quite been shunted aside yet by Cyril Ramaphosa and his team, but it's more or less disappeared. Load shedding, which seems to be getting better, whether it's a seasonal thing, I don't know. Rising sovereign debt, still rising. Failing infrastructure, still failing. And heightened crime levels, still very heightened. And you go on to say, not to mention concern regarding the outcome of the upcoming election, which you've just spoken of. So there's still, there may have been a couple that are not quite as bad as they used to be, negative factors that is, but the other ones are still there, John.
Yes, but they are getting better. So the big thing is, so you've mentioned, I think, five or six of them. And the big thing about the market is not that all five of them are going to disappear, but that they don't get worse and that they get better. And of the five of them, I would say three of them are getting better. So let's focus on the ones that are getting better. So when you get shares that are trading, ABSA trades on a 10% dividend yield and a 20% discount to the liquidation value of the bank. So, you know, there's a lot of bad news bust. It's basically the lowest valuation that it's traded on, you know, since probably prior to 94, when there was a worry about the whole democratic outcome. So there's a lot of bad news. So all you need is some of the bad news to get better. It doesn't have to be eradicated. And the things that are definitely getting better is load shedding. So I would, you know, I would obviously, the last month, there's been no load shedding in South Africa, and there's no doubt there's some, electioneering suspension of load shedding, and they're putting their best foot forward. Although, interestingly, you know, the data on how much diesel is being burned hasn't actually gone up much. So, and the availability factor of energy is actually up at 65%. So it's not an obvious tactic by the ANC, but let's take the last month out of it.
Yeah, sorry, John, just before you go on that the question of 65% that you just mentioned. Is it because there's a lack of demand in the economy and therefore industrial South Africa doesn't need to use the electricity because it's not working at full capacity?
Well, actually, the manufacturing output in South Africa started to grow again. I mean, it hasn't grown in the last 5 years, it is true. And electricity demand from Eskom has fallen because so much of industrial and consumer South Africa has gone off the grid. So some of the improvement in load shedding is because demand has fallen, because the economy hasn't grown, but most of it because people have put in solar and wind. But that does, you know, that also counts. You know, it's not the main thing is you don't want the lights to go off. But what I'm saying is, if you just forget about the last month, which is a bit abnormally good, the trend in the last 7 months is definitely better. And this is something I follow very closely. And things are off a very low base are definitely improving at Eskom. And I actually will stick what I said 6 months ago. In 6 or 12 months' time, there will be no load shedding again in South Africa ever, because basically 15% of the whole of has gone off the grid, and the availability from the core Eskom coal stations has improved. It's still very unacceptably low, but it is showing a steady improvement. So there is no doubt that load shedding is improving. You know, and people don't talk about it. That's the other interesting thing about South Africans. You know, a year ago when load shedding was stage six, all you heard was about it. It's hardly been a peep from anyone about a month without load shedding, which is, I find, quite interesting. And yes, just to take a step back, the effect of reduced load shedding on the South African economy cannot be understated. I mean, I think load shedding in the 2 years up to 6 months ago took off as much as 2% GDP growth per year. So I'm saying we lost 4% of our GDP over 2 years as a result of load shedding. The cessation of load shedding, therefore, obviously adds 4% onto GDP. And at the same time, commodity prices are moving up a bit, and interest rates may, in 6 months' time, come down a bit. And Transnet, which is the infrastructure, is not getting worse anymore. And actually, in the last couple of months, it started to improve a bit as well. So if you added all those things together, you could easily see, in a year's time, the South African economy print a 3% GDP growth number.
Which is still low, but certainly much better than being flat as it is at the moment. And as for not hearing a peep about the good news regarding load shedding, well, you know what people are like. Especially the media is like. If you tell someone a bad news story, you pass it on to, I think the statistic is, you pass it on to 11 people, friends and associates, etc. If you get a good story, I think 3 people get the good story. People love to moan. There's one other thing you say here, which is very interesting. You talk about the disinvestment in South Africa. You say positioning is also at extremely negative levels, with foreign investors voting with their feet and selling 710 billion rands worth of SA equities over the last 7 years, which is a significant sum for a country like South Africa. And it reminds me of the old joke, John, where there's a chap bowling along the road in his motor car and he gets pulled over by the police. And the policeman says to him, "You know you're going down a one-way street, don't you?" And the driver, which is you, by the way, says, "I am only going one way." So he's going against the traffic, but he insists he's in the one-way street. You see what I mean? Do you ever feel a little bit isolated, you and a few select other value investors in South Africa?
Yeah, I think we often do, but that's a good situation. The more isolated we are, the more we know the future returns will be better, because it just makes sense. You should be buying when others are selling, because you're getting things at a discount, and you should be selling when others are buying. And really, we've got to the point where 6 months ago, South Africa was, 12 months ago, was complete joke, you know, that people would say it's almost uninvestable. And we've had the foreigners selling for 6 years to take their holdings in South African shares to basically all-time lows. And then the interesting thing is, usually South African investors buy from them at this stage. But in the last 3 years, South Africans have joined the foreigners in selling, because the Treasury 3 years ago allowed South Africans to take up to 45% of their money offshore, which, you know, they were doing the right thing, but it was badly timed, I think. And I think, and I know that over the last 3 years, the average balanced fund in South Africa has taken 10% of their weighting in South African shares and added it to foreign shares, at swapping their South African shares at this level at 18 to the dollar into very expensive international shares dominated by the US market, which is very much overpriced and obviously has risen. So we've had the funny situation where the foreigners and the locals have sold at the same time. And that's how the valuation, that's how ABSA gets to 145 rand and to a 10% dividend yield, because there have been no buyers. And that's when you make a lot of money, when you're the only buyer and everyone's a seller. So South Africans now have 39% in South African equities and 36% in international equities. And if you go back 20 years ago, South African balanced funds had 70% in South African equities. So they have sold down from 70 to basically 39, 38%. And the foreigners are now underweight our reduced benchmark. So we like to look at a valuation. South African shares trade on 9x earnings, 6% dividend yields, the biggest discount to emerging markets ever, and the biggest discount to developed markets. So valuation is not something that is subjective. You know, it's absolutely objective. Valuation is at an all-time low. Positioning we've discussed, it's 9 out of 10, the positioning, because the foreigners are all out and the South Africans are 80% out. So valuation and positioning is in your favor. The only thing you need is some sort of catalyst. And the first catalyst that we spoke about a year ago, when we first went very overweight South Africa, was load shedding, and this is working out. And then the final catalyst will be to get through the election. So it doesn't have to be a fantastic result. It just has to be not a disaster. In other words, the ANC the disaster, the bad scenario that the market's worried about, the ANC goes to 40% and then forges an alliance with the EFF or the MK or a combination thereof.
Okay, so you don't think that if the word EFF comes into a sentence with the ANC or MK comes into a post-election sentence from a reporter with the ANC, you don't think people are going to say, wait a second, we don't want those people coming back in, or rather having an influence over the South African political economy and the economy itself. You're not worried about that?
Well, it is obviously a risk. You know, the thing about making a return is you have to take on some risk. You know, it's not, there is no such thing as a riskless return. You have to take the view that that's not going to happen. And that is a view I'm happy to take. I mean, obviously, it's possible it can happen. But all I've got to say is, what are the probability? First of all, the ANC has to get 40%, which, you know, I think they'll do better than people think. So you have to cross the first hurdle. They have to get 40%. I'd say the odds of the ANC getting as low as 40% could be 50%. You know, and then once they've got that, they then have to choose the EFF stroke MK above the DA as their alliance partner. And that is another probability. And I would say the probability of that is 20%, because, you know, the ANC, well, they are aware that if they choose the EFF and the MK, what they are choosing for South Africa. And so I'm sure they don't really want to have an alliance with the DA, their old enemy, and given the history of South Africa, but they may have to. If that had to happen, so you've basically got a 50% chance they get 40, and then a 20% chance they choose the EFF stroke MK. 50 times 20 means, in my view, there's a 10% probability of the disastrous outcome, which will be disastrous, make no mistake. But you have to look at the probability, and I would say the probability is 10%. The market is pricing in a much higher probability of that.
You have mentioned ABSA, and you gave a compelling argument by looking at the share price in US dollar terms, although it's listed on the JSE Securities Exchange. You've also mentioned in your article low liquidity on the JSE and also a shrinking JSE, as companies seem to be quite regularly being removed from the JSE for various reasons. And maybe Anglo-American is next, but we don't need to talk about that. So then you're getting a small target universe, John, at the Value Yes. Fund at 91. Give us another example or two, if you're allowed to, of which stocks, apart from ABSA, look incredibly good value to your mind.
So before I get to that, let me just say something about a shrinking market and low liquidity. That is actually a positive for returns. So I get a lot of people going, oh, the JSE is a dead market, the liquidity is bad, the number of shares goes down every day. I don't want to be involved in such a market. I'd rather be involved in the US market, which is massively liquid and growing quickly. Well, the reason why the US market is massively liquid and growing quickly is because it's very expensive. So all the companies there are issuing shares and they're doing IPOs. And that's actually a market you don't want to be invested in. If you want to make returns, you want to be invested in the JSE, where the valuations are very low and the number of shares are shrinking, because private equity and overseas companies keep on buying out our companies. And you mentioned Anglo-American, and we've had MediClinic, and we've had a whole lot of delistings in the last couple of years. We're having multi-choice now. So you have to say, why is this happening? Well, the answer why it's happening is because our shares are fundamentally undervalued, and because the investors are leaving these ridiculous returns on the table, private equity or foreign companies are coming in and buying out South African companies, offering a big premium, but they're still getting these companies for low price, and South Africans are allowing this to happen by keep on selling their shares and buying more shares on the S&P. So, okay, that's an aside. So the other shares we like are, so we've chosen ABSA. So the banks are all good, but ABSA we think is the best one. And then we've got industrial stocks, and we've chosen these shares, and here I'm talking about the two hospital shares, which are Life Healthcare and Netcare, and Spar, as three other shares that we think are the best entry if you like the story of South Africa being not as bad as the market suggests. And we've chosen them principally because all three of them are trading at their COVID lows, which is interesting. So I've mentioned South African shares have done badly in the last 5 years. But even though they've done badly in rand, they might be up 40 or 50% from the lows of COVID 4 years ago. But interestingly, the two hospital shares in Spar are between them actually on their COVID lows, and there's pretty much no shares in the world that are trading at that level of 4 years ago when we were in the middle of COVID. So the reason for that is, you know, that South Africa means all shares are cheap, but then you get an extra discount because these three companies have had their own problems. And the problems of Life and Netcare are really that the market is worried about NHI, and I think overly worried about NHI. So you get an extra 40% discount. And in the case of SPAR, they've had two own goals, which is a bad implementation of a new software package in South Africa and their investment in Poland, which we think they'll get out of. And we see all of these problems getting less. So you get the South African discount and you get an extra discount for the problems in those companies. So those are the three that we've chosen. And
I think this is a startling figure. When you talk about those companies, Life Healthcare, Netflix, Netcare, Spar.
Wish it was Netflix.
Yes, I'm sure you do. Spar, yeah. Roynet and Absa. They yes. make up 27% of your portfolio. And the index weight of those companies that I've just mentioned is just 3%. You're going down that one-way street way against the market, aren't you?
Yes, because that's how you make returns. You don't forget about the index and you say these shares, you know, have underperformed the South African market, which has not exactly done well, by at least 50% in the last 3 years, if not more, 60 or 70%. They are all fundamentally deeply undervalued and totally hated for the various reasons. And to give you an idea of the valuation, something like Life Healthcare is now just South Africa plus one drug, one Alzheimer's drug overseas after they sold out of the UK. You basically buy the South African hospitals on a 9 PE, on 5x EBITDA, on a 5 or 6% dividend yield, and you get the new drug that they're using overseas in treatment of Alzheimer's for free, which, by the way, could be a massive, massive drug internationally in dollar terms. And you get that for free. And the work we've done suggests that this drug could be equal in 2 or 3 years' time, could be equal to the whole valuation of Life Healthcare in South Africa, because it's obviously a dollar asset. So that's the kind of deep value. I mean, the share is basically halved and in the last 3 years, and the same with SPAR and the same with Netcare. So you need to have a lot of it. And they don't have a lot of debt to these companies, and they're going to survive, and they're 65% off their all-time highs.
Okay, so you are sitting there with your thick skin, with your conviction and your courage, which you also mentioned in your article. And would you be on tenterhooks as we wait for the results to come in from the May 29th election?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, what we don't want to happen, and I mean, there's no sugarcoating this, is if the ANC gets 40 and they choose the EFF as their partner or MK or a combination thereof, is the outcome is that is a very bad outcome for the capital markets in South Africa. It doesn't matter how you cut it. And I would say, and obviously these shares that we've spoken about are going to go down. I don't think they'll go down as much as they'll go up if there's a good outcome, because as we mentioned, I think a lot of the bad news is in the price. But I'm under no illusion if that happened, the rand will weaken. Even though the rand is cheap, the rand will weaken and these shares will fall, and it will be bad for our fund, even though, you know, we still have 35% offshore and we've got 10% in gold. So we've got some other things, but half the fund is in these shares, as you mentioned. So I will be on tenterhooks, but all you can do in investing is to say it's a bet that I'm prepared to take and to go with it. And to go back to your thing about low liquidity, it's no good to say I'll wait until the election happens and, you know, then I'll be certain of a good or bad thing. Because, you know, if there's a bad outcome, you know, the shares are going to drop 20% and there's no liquidity, what are you going to do? Sell then. And if there's a good outcome, these shares that we've spoken about could rise 20%, and then what are you going to do? Buy. You, unfortunately, like, there is no free lunch. You have to take a position. It has to be considered against the probabilities. It has to be in the cheapest shares. It'll give you the most protection if there's a bad outcome. But in the end, you have to take a position. And that's unfortunately the truth about investing. You can't wait for the news to happen and then buy the shares.
John, you always present such a compelling argument. Thank you very much for your time. It's been a fascinating chat. John Bickard is portfolio manager responsible for the 91 Investment Fund, and he's speaking to us from New York. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.